So, are we ready?
Yes, we are.
I think we should do this then.
All right. Hello, I'm Simon Mercer, and welcome to Crave. This is the podcast and the videocast dedicated to film, music, theatre, TV, Scrabble.
Yep, absolutely.
Anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
Now, this week we've got The Return of the King. No, I can't take credit for that. That was actually your line, Simon. and it's a brilliant line.
It is.
Which is more than can be said.
Are you going
to
say that?
To be fair, for The Lion King itself. But we'll come to that shortly, yeah?
Yeah. And also about wild beasts.
Oh, yeah.
And also, technically very well done,
right.
Is an alligator thriller.
Oh, dear.
Called Crawl.
Okay.
Snappy little movie.
Thought it might be.
I've got something quite good to say about that.
Okay, fair enough. So, yet more CGI, as though we weren't overly, confused up already. Toy Story 4.
Starting to lose count, actually.
Well, people kept on saying that the Toy Story 3, they wrapped up this perfect trilogy. They're just like, that's it, it's done. Nothing else needs to be done. Like, don't even look at it any longer. It's perfect. And then they went to the fourth. Was it worth it? We shall find out.
Okay. And we'll finish with some music. I'm still in the world of film, but yes. A musical film to cleanse our palate.
Oh, yes.
And how better could you do it than with the Beatles?
Indeed.
A film called Yesterday, which you, I think, would be fair to say, thought was a cracker.
Yes.
But that's... I didn't.
Yeah, but that's because I'm not as cold-hearted as you. Clearly are you. There is a heart of ice beating that person,
yourself, I can
tell
so.
You. Oh, it's fantastic. Anyway, we'll save that for later.
We shall.
Because to begin with, right?
Yeah.
To begin with, we need to have a quick talk about The Lion King.
Yeah.
And there is a fundamental question to be asked.
I know. Yes, go on.
Go on, what's the question?
Why?
Exactly. Yeah. And we know exactly what the reason is. Actually, we know there's about tens, possibly hundreds of millions of reasons. But beyond that, so there's not even any point doing the plot synopsis.
No, it's the same story.
It's almost shot for shot the same film, except it's half an hour longer.
Yeah.
It's stunning
to look at.
Yes,
it is. It's technically a stupendous piece of digitalization, if that's the word, of the landscape and the animals. I mean, really, it is quite a wonder to look at. I saw it in a 2D version.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought that was still pretty damn good.
I would imagine, like, IMAX or 3D, or God forbid, both, would have you questioning everything you think you know about reality.
Yes.
It is technically utterly perfect.
Yeah.
The lion's manes, the texture of the trees, everything about it is utterly, utterly stunning.
Mm-hmm. But
that's it. I mean, that's it. That's all I have to say about it. There's nothing else to say. Because
well,
as a film, that's its problem.
Yeah, so let's just quickly go through some aspects. I didn't go back and watch the 1994, I think it was 94 film.
It is, because it's 25 years
ago. Yes, but I have fond memories of it.
Do, yeah.
And I thought it was had a snappiness to it. It was jaunty.
Yep.
It had some snappy humour. Had some menace. Some good voice actors.
Yep.
Jeremy Irons as Scar. You know, Rowan Atkinson was Zazu. I mean, it was full of character. It was full of life.
Yep.
This film is slow, as you rightly point out. It's longer. It takes its time more. And I've got some thoughts on that.
Mm.
I don't think the voice actors progress it in any way. In fact, mostly I think they fall behind the first lot. And I thought the music was not as memorable as the first one, to be honest with you. I didn't think.
Considering it's the same songs.
Yeah, the same song. They've been reimagined a little bit and reinterpreted.
Yeah.
It didn't make my heart sing by any means.
No. And I think I know why not.
Okay.
Right? Here's the basic problem. It is, as we said, perfect.
Mm.
So when you got lions on screen, you genuinely can believe that they've actually got lions on screen.
Yeah.
Right? What's one thing that lions can't do?
Talk.
Exactly. Another thing that lions, not uniquely among all animals, they say humans, can't do is show emotion with their faces.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the entire, you've got a film where the entire cast has been Botoxed.
That is actually a very good point. You're right. Absolutely right.
And so
it removes an element of interpretation from the actors, doesn't it?
It removes a massive part of what we understand as how actors deliver emotion.
Yeah.
And it becomes effectively a radio play.
That's interesting.
For the people watching the video, this will make sense. If you're watching the podcast, you won't get the point of this quite so much. But it's like when you're absolutely terrified and all you can do is look like this. Yeah. And then when you're also absolutely overjoyed and all you can do is look like this.
Steve's being stony-faced. Yeah.
Because you've got no expression, no emotion in your face.
Okay.
At all. None.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a very good point. And of course, when it was a cartoon, they could express as much as they wanted.
I mean, close your eyes and you can imagine Simba as a little lion cub with a great big beaming smile, because that's how cartoon animation works.
Okay, I think that's a really good observation. I had another thought, which I put in my review on our website, cravepodcast.com,
cravepodcast.com. Yeah.
Because I, as you said, it takes longer.
Yeah.
And there are deliberately so.
Yeah.
And there's this long sequence near the beginning of a little rat or mouse scurrying across some landscape. It takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other sequences like that where the filmmakers look as if they've said to themselves, we've got this wonderful technology. We can show the detail and the wonder of nature.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Yes.
And I had this feeling that part of the way through as if the idea of the Lion King about the circle of life and protect... And honouring the circle of life and looking after the next generation, looking after the environment, that this film, using the technology, was almost felt like a piece of wonderful conservationist propaganda.
Okay.
Because how many of us and of the kids of today watching that film, the new one I'm talking about, will ever see a landscape like that?
Probably never.
Never. And the kids watching it today might grow up and say, hey, mum, dad, grandma, granddad, what happened to that world we saw in The Lion King? Mm. How come it's not around anymore?
That's an interesting point.
So I just kind of wondered if there was a sort of agenda of showing the beauty of it all, as if to say it's probably gone, folks, but maybe it's not too late if we all pull together.
Another way of reading it is,
yes,
we have spent hundreds of millions of dollars on this technology.
Oh, yeah.
We're bloody well going to make
advantage
of it. And so what ends up happening at the end of it is there's no soul to it.
I think that's right. And I think, I agree with that. And the thing is, Steve, I was, because we had a little, Steve and I had a little conversation, and you were more scathing than I was.
A little bit, yeah.
And that's fine. And I was wondering why that was the case. And then I thought, you know what?
What?
Maybe it's because my expectations were quite low.
Ah, okay.
Because I'm not a particular fan of remakes, usually. It just raises that question. Why are they doing it? Are they just doing it to make money? I mean, what else? You know?
Well, if you look at the other remakes that they've been doing, it's all been live-action remakes. Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, which is probably possibly the
Dumbo.
Best. Dumbo, yeah. Well, Dumbo's kind of starting on a progression toward...
Yeah.
Next you get to where you've got, like, mostly human...
Yeah.
Mostly live-action humans... with one central animated character. Then you get The Jungle Book, which is the way around. It's one live-action human and an entire plethora of remarkably well-voiced, but ultimately animated animals. And now, let's face it, there isn't a single actual physical thing anywhere in The Lion King. It's an animation. It's not a live action.
No, it's not.
It really... I mean, it bloody well looks like
it
one.
Does. It's oh, dear, it is. I mean,
Lord, it looks like
it
one.
Does. So, I mean, I think you put your finger on when you talked about the soul, the lack of soul, something about this digital representation, as wonderful and detailed as it is, you know it's not real.
Yeah.
And somehow that robs it of something.
It does.
It
does. Mm. But at the same time, you wonder, like, they've obviously had to make a sacrifice because you can't have the lips moving on an actual lion. And these are meant to be actual lions. And let's face it, to all intents and purposes, they are actual lions.
Yeah, yeah.
But an actual lion doesn't have lips that move when it speaks. And so if you want to go down that path, you have to accept the fact that you can't get a large element of what we understand of as how a film conveys its emotion and its energy.
So it doesn't soar at all in terms of humour and a crackle to it.
No,
and
not spark. Quite.
I saw it, I think you did too, Steve. I saw it in a pretty full cinema. I think it was a Friday night and there were a lot of young kids around.
It was a late Sunday, it was a Sunday tea time, and I got the pictures and the sign said, Lion King, sold out.
Yes.
So yeah, it was a packed auditorium.
And what was the reaction like where you were?
By the time it was halfway through, some of the younger kids were getting taken out by Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was overall, it was, you know, you could hear mumbles of voices, which isn't always a good sign.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until Timon and Pumbaa came on and there was a couple of fart jokes that you kind of got the little kids back on side
again.
Yes,
that's true.
Because think about it, right? Without the charm, without the joy, you've still got all the darkness.
Yeah.
You've still got the elephant's graveyard.
Yeah, yeah.
Heavy on the carcass.
Yep.
That's a little bit grim.
The stampede is pretty grim.
The hyenas?
The hyenas are much darker, I think, in this version than in the original. Much, much darker.
Well, they're nasty creatures, hyenas, so if you're going to be authentic,
you've got
nasty hyenas.
Yeah. And I agree. I think the audience, I got a sense in the screening I saw that it was a bit of a mixed reaction.
I don't really know who it was aimed at, because for an awful lot of it, you know, the philosophizing between live-action animals about the circle of life is going to be lost for a large part on small kids, who are supposedly the target audience, I think. So I don't know. I mean, can we go back though to the voice casting?
Yes.
The voice acting.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
So we've kept James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
Possibly the most magnificent voice
in
the known universe.
Yes.
As Mufasa.
Yeah.
But we've got Chiwetel Ejiofor as Scar.
Yeah.
Now, do you think he got the Scar or the name first?
Scar first, didn't he?
Well, we got the scarf. What was his name before he got the scarf?
I don't know.
One does wonder. anyway, you got Chiwetel Ejiofor as Scar. And I mean, the man's a phenomenal actor.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be fair about this. But he wasn't evil enough.
No, I thought that too. He was, it was finally delivered. But if you had in the back of your mind the memory of Jeremy Irons,
who
was more maleficent, is that the right word?
Absolutely.
It didn't quite match up.
No.
For some reason. And I thought Beyonce as Nala was a little flat, to be honest with you.
Perfunctory,
that's a good word.
Because again, she's not an actress. She's a very, very good singer.
Yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and...
And what did you think of Mr. Glover as Simba?
Again, unremarkable.
Yeah.
And again, part of the problem is, and this is especially a true thing of Simba, of a Scar.
Yeah.
You take away the faces, you take away the ability to...
Yeah. Yeah.
To scowl and to glower.
Yes.
And this is what a good actor, let's face it, Chiwetel Ejiofor, good actor.
Yeah.
This is what they need to be able to do. And when he's had that taken away from him, he's acting with one hand or one paw behind his back.
Yes. And I was interested to see how John Oliver, the British comic writer who is very well known for That Was the Week. No, not the week that was. That was
the Last Week Tonight.
Last Week Tonight, which I think is very clever. And he, I started off at the beginning of the film. I wasn't taken by him. As the film progressed, I slowly got used to his interpretation. I quite enjoyed it by the end.
You were just troubled when he came on at the beginning and said, "Here's Morning Report."
Yeah, that's right.
And that just didn't sit well with you, did it?
No. Yeah. Yeah, and they really needed to have Timon and Pumbaa pull some laughter out of the fire, so to speak, because the film needed it. Seth Rogen was all right.
Adequate.
I remember Nathan Lane from the original
as
being a really great character actor.
Yeah.
So not awful, but not great.
No, and so I think, to be perfectly honest, right, you remember what we said about Aladdin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because let's face it, they're banging these out of the... crazy rate.
Yep.
We can barely keep up with them. but Aladdin, we were saying at the end of that, if you've got a child who hasn't seen either, show them the new one first.
Yes.
I think the same has to be said.
Yeah,
here.
I agree.
Because if you're familiar with and you have affection for the
1994
original,
yeah,
then this is going to be found wanting, I think. So did we feel the love tonight?
No, but I would say, because it is amazing to look at it, it's kind of worth seeing just to see where the technology is at these days. If you can sort of...
yeah.
I mean, you, you wonder what's next in terms of the way they'll able to render
it is
reality.
At once the film's greatest asset.
Yes, but also
its single biggest flaw, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're not feeling the love tonight.
No.
Incidentally, did you notice they sang that song during the daytime?
Oh, I didn't pick up. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, you see, ultimately, not a film you engage with.
No. I'm trying to think of anything that. There are a couple of dramatic battle scenes near the end. The fight scenes were the director did quite a good job with. That's Jon Favreau, but it's not going to stay with me for a long time.
No. No.
Anyway, will Steve, geez, doing my masterful segue.
Absolutely.
Will another film stay with me? Also a film that's designed for a younger audience. And this is another installment in the Toy Story franchise, which began way back in 1995.
Yes.
And I think I've seen all of the previous three. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I have not seen number four. Should I or should I not?
Well, here's the thing, right? I mean, you saw the first ones because you're a parent.
Correct.
And there was an absolute inevitability to seeing them as a result, right? And so, I mean, it's a Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've already seen it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a very real sense. I'm being a bit unfair here, to be honest, because you've got this fundamentally similar setup. You've got Woody, you've got Buzz, you know, you've got the characters that you expect. You've got Bonnie... Yeah, it was Bonnie, isn't it?
Mm,
yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah, the cowgirl.
Yeah.
No, I thought like Bonnie. What am I talking about? Bonnie is
what are you talking about?
Is in fact the new child.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, they're trying to stay sort of chronological with this. And so Andy, who owned all the toys, has gone off to college now.
Goodness.
Left home.
Yep.
But the parents have got a new kid, which is a little bit awkward. and her name is Bonnie.
Okay.
And she goes off to kindergarten and she leaves the toys at home. Well, she actually fetches one or two along. She's, you know, she's like that, you see. It's very, 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 very rebellious, very anarchic.
Mm-hmm.
So she fetches them. But what she does on her first day at kindergarten is she does a little bit of arts and crafts. And she makes a toy.
Uh-huh.
Which she got a little plastic spork.
Right.
And she glues on some pipe cleaners and some googly eyes and two ends of lolly stick for feet, and she's got a toy. She calls it Forky.
Okay.
So on one level, you've got an existential treatise on what it means to be a toy, because obviously, once she brings the toy home, it's animated.
Okay.
Because it is her toy.
Yes.
And we're obviously, you know, the shop bought toys all walk and talk. But suddenly so does Forky, because Forky is her toy.
But Forky,
and they don't overdo this, but in the same way that that Buzz in the very, very first film can't believe he's a toy, he insists he's actually...
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Buzz Lightyear to infinity and beyond, Forky wants to get in the bin.
Because
he's trash. He keeps saying, I'm trash. No, you're not trash, you're a toy. And so, but then they have to do something with it. And this is where it starts to get really, really interesting. They go off on a road trip. They get into their big RV, like the Americans do, right?
Yes.
They go off. And they find themselves, through plot machinations, not even an attempt to reconstruct, in a very, very creepy antique shop. Because let's face it, there is something inherently creepy about antique shops, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a doll, voiced by Christina Hendricks, called Gabby Gabby.
Okay.
Who's ironically doesn't have a functioning voice box like Woody does. You know, the drawstring, and when you release it, So she's got all the gubbins inside, but the voice box itself doesn't work. And so she's got henchmen, and they're called Vincent. There are several called Vincent. I'm trying to find the voice actor name, and I can't find the name right now. But basically, they look like a very, very creepy ventriloquist doll.
Okay.
And seriously, they are. Even at my age, I was wondering, am I going to sleep well tonight? they were really
well. Okay.
Done.
Oh, well, that's good.
And so you can imagine where it progresses from there.
Yes.
How variously Woody and Forky and all the rest have to get rescued by each other, and the thing is, right, there's obviously there is no attempt for the film to be photorealistic, because it's toys
mm-hmm.
talking
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Woody's mouth does actually move, you know, unlike, say, lions.
Mm.
And yet, because obviously it's from the same technological era as Lion King, the backgrounds are phenomenal.
Okay,
It is an incredible piece of animation, but it supports a story that's told really, really nicely.
Yeah.
And it's told with, I mean, it's got Tom Hanks in it.
Yeah.
I mean, do I really, need to say much more than that?
Yeah.
There is so much warmth in the moment the man opens his mouth, you're going, yeah, life's fine. We're good.
Yeah.
Right? And so when you got that level of warmth,
mm-hmm.
then suddenly the technological brilliances simply support that.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So,
can I just ask a question? Because I haven't seen it, but my 7-year-old grandson has.
Oh, yeah.
And the report I had back.
Go on.
Was
and
that.
And let's face it, this is the one that matters, not mine.
Was that there. And I don't want you to divulge too much for fear of spoiling it, but apparently at the ending, there was a little sequence or an unfolding of the story which a 7-year-old found a little bit upsetting and a bit sad to do with where the allegiance of Andy went. Is that?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's a long time since I've seen Toy Story 3, so I don't remember the details, but I do remember a lot of people have said that at the end of number 3, it's a bit tear-jerky.
Right, well, okay.
And so I can see how it sort of ties into that.
Okay.
Because you can't keep making the same film.
No.
It has to progress.
Yes.
Again, we don't want to give too much away,
mm.
but you can't simply have all the toys going back into the same toy box every night and having the same adventures the next day.
So
there is. This is the thing about a film like Toy Story, and this is Pixar through and through. They make intelligent films for children.
Mm.
There's not many people do that and do it well.
No,
but Pixar do it consistently. They're children's films, but they are so well made that grown-ups who take their kids can enjoy them as they're just sitting through them,
absolutely,
without throwing fart gags for the parents. They are intelligent films for children, and part of that is slightly challenging, emotionally.
Okay. Well, that's
good. Nicely.
Okay. Cool. Very good. So, actually, on the basis of that, maybe I might go see Toy Story 4.
Go and see Toy Story 4. Postmodern Jukebox will be coming to New Zealand later this year, so for this week's podcast extra, I've been chatting with Aubrey Logan, who will be joining Postmodern Jukebox's creator Scott Bradley when they come to New Zealand for the Welcome to the 20s 2.0 tour.
Hi Steve, I'm doing great. How are you?
Not so bad, thanks. Now, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles. I am in La La Land,
Would that by any chance be anything to do with your album Where the Sunshine is Expensive, or you just happen to be there right now?
It is. It's the city I call home, believe it or not. Yes, I am home. I'm about to leave on a tour with an artist by the name of Dave Cause in a couple days here, but we are rehearsing, so I am sleeping in my own bed for the next few nights here, and then after this tour is over, I'll be over to see you guys.
So how long are you going to be on the road for?
I'll be on the road all summer long, and we will be traveling the United States. And then the day after this tour ends, I will be on a plane down to Australia to start the Postmodern Jukebox tour. And then we're wrapping up in New Zealand with you. So I'll be perpetually on tour until roughly mid-October, and then I'll start on my solo tour shortly after that.
Yeah, I was having a quick look on your
website,
Celia. You are indeed always on tour. I mean, I'm glancing here. 23rd of February, you're going to be in Watford, of all places. I mean, you get around, don't you?
I do, but it's all very well worth it. You know, the traveling part is not the fun part, but once you get there, and you get to be on the stage and share the room with everyone who's come to spend that time with you, it's all worth it.
And I see you're not just simply being you. You've got a number of different personas that you seem to manifest. So you're going to be Aubrey Logan with Dave Cause and the Summer Horns. Then you're going to be part of Postmodern Jukebox, of course. And then you're going to be doing your solo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep track of this?
I have a very, very large Dropbox.
Okay.
and there's a lot of music in there. And a very, you know, thank you, Apple products have helped. Having a calendar every day I wake up and look and see, what am I doing today? But no, I don't feel fragmented. I feel like I am myself everywhere I go. Goodness, thank God for that. I don't have multiple personalities, just multiple songs. So
fair enough.
I have a great time. Everywhere I am, I get to do what I love to do, and it's just in a different context. And but really, it's all music that I love to play. So I certainly feel like I am doing what I was put on this earth to do, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Sounds good. Well, I know when we see you in October, when you come to New Zealand, and you're actually doing quite an extensive tour down here, you're going to be in your capacity as a member of Postmodern Jukebox. So how did that collaboration come
about? That's right. I was in a dressing room in my hometown of Seattle, and I got a call from Scott Bradley's manager. I think Scott had seen a video of mine on YouTube, where I was actually taking a modern, you know, pop song and turning it kind of jazzy, which Postmodern Jukebox does all the time, obviously. And so I was already doing things, and I'm an arranger and a writer myself, and I was already kind of doing, you know, this old school concept that, wow, we can get real humans to play these songs and not use any auto-tune, you know?
Gosh, who'd have thought it?
Scott, yeah, I know. And Scott, I think, found out who I was through I'm a huge fan of hers. She's a singer by the name of Shoshana Bean, who is currently on Broadway playing the waitress, but she was charged by Scott Bradley to find some more singers. And I think she connected us. So then I made my first video with Postmodern Jukebox a few years ago, Bad Blood, the Taylor Swift cover. Mm-hmm. And I came to Scott, you know, with the idea, and we brainstormed a little, and I gave him a melody and said, here's a bass line. Do you want to write chords around this? And could you do this? And then he arranged it, fleshed it all out. And that was our first collaboration. Then before I know it, I was on tour with these folks. So that's how we met.
So you were headhunted, basically. That's brilliant.
Well, you know, it's sort of. I guess I was, but really, it's such a small world. Music is such a small world. I feel like we would have found each other anyway, you know. And it's kind of like 6 degrees of separation, except in my case, 2 degrees, you know, with them.
So what will you be doing with Postmodern Jukebox? Are you going to be singing, or are you going to be on the trombone when you come down here?
Yes.
A little bit of both.
always both. Yeah. Both are, I've always got a microphone in one hand and a trombone in the other hand. So, I guarantee that both will happen, just like in the Dave Koz show, and just like on my own tours. I am a singer and a trombone player, and
but not at the same time.
I just can't wait to be back in the same song, not at the same time, but in the same song. And you know, when people say, "Oh, that's unusual, you're a brass player," you know, singing and playing brass instrument, and I go, "You know what? You have heard this before. Louis Armstrong is way older than me." And, I think this tradition is going to go on forever. There are a lot of horn players I know who sing, and vice versa. And it's really fun. I love it.
Oh, fair enough. So tell us a little bit about the show that's coming up. And it's billed as the Welcome to the 20s 2.0 tour. And so we can see the jazz is strong with this one, clearly. What's the set list looking like? Can you tell us that?
Well, I have no idea because it hasn't been made yet.
Oh, wow.
So we will. I mean, I know I will do a lot of the classic ones that I've done before. So Bad Blood, I can guarantee that will be on the show.
Excellent.
But other than that, you know, we're going to be, even though we're a vintage sounding band, we still, believe it or not, we use email. We break that rule. We do indeed use email. So, to communicate. So we will be getting an influx of emails very soon from the music director. You know, Jesse Elder is wonderful and he collaborates with Scott on these set lists. And then, you know, we put in our input later down the road, and then we're going to have 3 days of rehearsal, and then we'll get on a plane and come down there. So, but I do know that. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, you're pulling a pull show together in 3 days. That's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Well, we rehearse for 3 days, but, you know, beforehand we are told what the set list is. But, you know, we're all doing our own thing. We don't have any more time to really do it. And even this tour I'm about to embark on this Friday is our first show. And we just did 2 days of rehearsal and we have one more day tomorrow. But, you know, it's okay with us because we eat, sleep and breathe music. So we all speak the same language. We just get together and decide what the conversation is. We do the thing and we get on the road and we get on stage. And that's our job. We love it.
Well, I mean, clearly you love it because I'm looking at the amount of touring you're doing. And even when you come down to New Zealand, you're doing what I think is 8 dates down here. You're going to be playing in cities I've not been to yet. So I mean, it's remarkable. Why the fascination with New Zealand? Other than the obvious, of course.
Well, you know, I think that I have never been down there with Postmodern Jukebox, but Postmodern Jukebox did tour in Australia and New Zealand in 2016, I believe.
Yeah.
And they absolutely, you know, had a mutual love with them and the audience down there. So I believe we're going to be in many cities that they've been to already. And that's why we're coming back, because we don't want to just say one and done, you know. We want to make sure we make it a tradition. So we're back.
Excellent. I mean, like I say, you're going to places that usually don't get to see the touring band, so that's quite brilliant.
I'm so happy about that. Yeah.
Are you going to be able to squeak in any of your own material on this show, or is it going to be purely a Postmodern Jukebox set?
Well, we're going to be doing Postmodern Jukebox material, but I'll be there with my CD, and I will absolutely be coming out to meet fans after the show, and I'll sign CDs for them. So while they won't necessarily hear the songs from my CD per se, each of the artists will be bringing their own albums down there and would be love to sign them for you. Also, we will be following up. I mean, I will. You can definitely expect me to be following up this tour with my solo tour in New Zealand as well later down the road. So if people just come on my website and sign up for the mailing list, I'll make sure they know when I'm back and they can hear my music in person then as well.
Oh, how fantastic. Now, you mentioned your album.
Of course.
And I mean, you've had two out this year already, haven't you? You're a busy lady. Which album are you plugging in particular?
Well, I'll be definitely bringing my latest album, Where the Sunshine is Expensive, which is my love letter to Los Angeles.
Isn't it?
And it is. It truly is. And we even have a Postmodern Jukebox buddy of mine as a feature on one of the songs on that album. Casey Abrams is singing a duet with me on that album. Actually, and believe it or not, he did the same on my first album.
He's singing on Put It Where You Want It, isn't he?
He is. And, you know, we do that a lot. Like, Postmodern Jukebox is this big, happy family, and we all just kind of find each other at our own gigs. It's really cool. So they can expect that I'll be there signing those, and I'll be bringing it back when I come back to New Zealand.
Fantastic, yeah. And I'm just looking at some of the track titles from that album. I mean, it's almost a love letter to Los Angeles Airport.
Well, as you mentioned before, I am always on the road, and that usually involves spending a lot of time at the Los Angeles Airport, and many airports, in fact. And, you know, artists are weird. I will admit that I am one of them. I'm allowed to say that because I am one of them. And when we're alone with our own thoughts, that's when we come up with these ideas. And even though you're surrounded by people at an airport, you can feel very alone at airports. And out came my material. So there you have it.
Oh, fair enough. And I have to tell you, your previous CD has got one of my favorite Nate titles for any album in quite some time. Your Mum's Favorite Songs. What a great name for an album.
Thank you. It's a little EP I put together. I think 6-song EP.
Yes.
Of songs that from the 1970s and 80s, and one from the late 60s, I believe. That I do love the 70s. I wasn't there, but I would have liked to be, you know, musically. And my parents, my mom, they're really my mom's favorite songs, if I'm being honest.
Okay, fair enough.
So I really got the chance to sing the songs I grew up hearing as a child because my parents played them for me all the time. Natural Woman, Carole King, you know, Jimi Hendrix, and we did, what else did we do? Gosh, I can't even keep track of my own music.
We got George Michael on there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Superstar and Careless Whisper in one song, yeah. So, you know, and I've been doing, actually that song, I've been doing at my live shows. And I'd never really recorded it. And so it was time to put it on something. So I figured, hey, if I'm doing a song of the 70s and 80s, if I'm doing an EP of songs from the 70s and 80s, I might as well sneak this in there because the audience keeps wanting to listen to it. And I've never really recorded it. So here you go. You know, that's that happened.
No, that makes an awful lot of sense. So do you have any plans to start writing more of your own material? Or going to keep on seeing more of your tributes to... The classics of the past?
The majority of my music is my own material. So my album Where the Soul Can is Expensive is mostly my songs. And also my first album, Impossible, is also my own material. So actually I do more of my own material than I do homages to the past. Because I do consider myself a writer first, you know. It's even though the stage is where the reward is, though. So yeah. Performing is certainly my passion. But yeah, for the most part, I actually do write most of my material.
Fair enough. Well, listen, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today, Aubrey. We're looking forward to seeing you. You're going to be here from the 11th to the 20th of October. It's not a long period of time, but you're going to be cramming an awful lot in. So we'll look forward to seeing when you come down to
the We are.
Thanks very much for talking to us today.
Fair. Thank you.
Now, Simon.
Yes.
I know you love a good thriller, don't you?
I don't mind a good thriller.
Yep. And you've seen one, you say, I said, kind of snappy?
Yeah. Well, it's...
It had a bit of bite to it.
It did, yes. Let's keep those...
It had teeth.
It did.
Was it fairly thick-skinned as well?
It was. All the above, yes.
Absolutely. So this is Crawl, isn't it?
It's Crawl, yeah.
Go on.
It's set in Florida.
Yep.
During a hurricane.
Right.
And basically... This massive hurricane floods a neighborhood where a father and daughter end up trapped in their house, which is full of alligators.
Excellent. What could possibly go wrong?
Yes. And I actually thought this was pretty good, actually.
Okay, because the setup, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
The setup sounds rubbish.
Well, maybe it is. But I was thinking about when I saw this film, because there have been so many of films in and around this type of, you know, if we go to Jaws and all the other shark movies, snake movies, spider movies, I don't know, everything. I mean, that we're full of, you know, snakes on planes and everywhere else. So what this has got going for it, I'll tell you, is it doesn't, I think it's, the action is presented in as realistic a way as it could be, almost. Of course, it stretches incredulity.
Yeah.
But it has a grittiness to it.
Yeah.
It's the script is not full of corny lines. I always remember this. I can't remember the name of the film, but Arnold Schwarzenegger did a film where he dispatched an alligator and said, "Your luggage." So it's a far cry from that.
Okay, that's good.
The actors are normal-looking people.
Ooh.
The lead actor is... her name is Kaya Scodelario. She plays the Haley, and the father is played by Barry Pepper.
Yeah, I look at the cast list here, and not only do I not recognise any of these names, half of them I can't even pronounce.
Yeah, so... And I think the Kaya, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce her name, does a really good job. She's just a young woman who's she just looks like a normal person. I know what I mean by that is they haven't dressed her up to look as if she stepped out of a fashion magazine.
Right, yeah.
You know, just like a fit young person who's just caught up in he's a good swimmer, which is important to the story.
Well, it would be,
yes. So, and the director, Alexander Aya, I think it is, or Aja.
Again, these are not easy names to pronounce.
No, no. Anyway, it's the usual thing of, you know, you don't want to show too much of the animal for as long as you can.
Yes.
Typical underwater scenes, swimming. It's got a bit of a gritty edge to it that makes it work. It's not too corny. There's not too much humor in it.
Okay.
As a lot of these films can sometimes have.
Well, some of them try to have humor in them. And as you say with the Arnold Schwarzenegger one,
there's a bit of a backstory which gives us a something to hang our hat on for the human characters.
Yeah.
The father and daughter have had an estranged relationship. They're kind of trying to patch it up. And I liked the fact that the ending, although it's dramatic and you might say a little far-fetched, it's below some of the ridiculous endings to some other of these sorts of thrillers where you think,
Seriously.
And it brought to mind another film which I thought for most of its journey was a really good thriller. It had that American actress called Blake Lively.
Oh, yeah.
Who I think she's a good actress. Liked her in that black comedy.
Oh, yes.
Anyway.
That one, yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to look it up now.
Yeah, go on.
Otherwise,
So she was very good in a film called The Shallows.
Yes.
And that was a shark thriller.
Yes, I remember that.
And I thought she did. I thought the film was genuinely gripping and it was scary. But the final denouement, the final coup de grace of knocking off the shark was this really implausible stunt that she worked out of diving down to the bottom and releasing some sort of cable. And just as the shark. I mean, I thought it was a shame because for the rest of the movie, it had this air of reality about it. But this film...
A Simple Favour.
Simple Favour, that was it.
Anna Kendrick.
Yes, Anna Kendrick. Yeah, so this film, I don't think it quite goes to that level. And so it felt a bit scary. And I went afterwards and did a bit of research into the behaviour of alligators.
Oh, right.
Well, because one wonders what you see depicted. Is it how... So apparently alligators will indeed... grab you, but they may let you go a little bit to get a better hold.
Yeah.
And so the advice is, if that happens, you kick and you yell and you poke them in the eye. And if
you don't want to offend them.
No, you do for that moment.
Yes.
That's your only chance.
Yeah.
And they do react to movement in the water.
Yes.
So if you are in the water and you stay still, your chances are not guaranteed, but you've got a better chance of surviving than if you thrash about and run and make a big hoopla.
I mean, so, to be fair, you could... Just come and ask me about this.
Yeah, because you live in Florida.
I was indeed a father with a daughter during hurricane season in Florida for 8 years.
Okay,
seriously, we would actually see alligators on the street.
Right.
I mean, proper, you know, dirty great big things.
Okay.
And there's one time we were driving home from a friend's house after dinner. I was coming through a neighbourhood and you come around a bend in the road and you could see lights flashing.
Right.
Patrol car type lights flashing around the court, around the bend, and so we came round, and there was the wildlife patrol people. I can't remember what they call themselves now, because alligators in Florida are in fact endangered.
Okay,
they're protected.
Right.
So unless you are actively being attacked, you can't shoot them. Which, this being America, remember, shooting things is what they do for sport, right? So if there's like a live alligator on your property, and we had friends who did in fact have live alligators on their property, you have to call trappers.
Okay.
Unless you are doing an actual self-defense, you can't actually harm them. And so this alligator is probably snout to tail 5 meters.
Whoa.
Give or take. Yeah, proper full-grown alligator on the pavement on the side of the road. Just hanging out. Alligating. That's what alligators do. They alligate. And it was alligating away at the side of the road. And trappers are coming. They've got I don't know exactly how they do it, but they obviously managed to somehow, tape up the snout. And they just calmly got out of the business, trapping a 15-foot alligator.
Wow.
That's what you see there.
Yeah.
We had friends who had a swimming pool at the bottom of their garden, and at the end of that, there was a fence. And beyond the fence, there was a retention pond. And then woods. And the rule that they followed was, we can see the bottom of our swimming pool, so we're safe. You can't see the bottom of the retention pond, so you have to assume there are alligators in it. And eventually they realised they had to have the fence rebuilt, and the fence actually dug into the ground, because alligators will be able to...
Right.
Underneath it. Yeah, seriously, it is...
Well, actually, so real. I think you probably might get a bit of a thrill out of this film.
I think
you actually probably would.
I think it might actually strike close to home for me a little
And just as one example of the script, because I jotted this. Well, instead of, like as I say, like some corny payoff line that's so pre-scripted, at one point our heroine is confronted and they slip around, the alligators slip around in a corner that they weren't meant to, and she just said, "You've got to be effing kidding me."
Yeah. Which is the most human...
Which is the most human thing to say.
I think that's what I'd be saying,
yeah, exactly. I thought, I'd say that.
Yes.
So,
probably would have you.
Yeah, so I think I'd give this... It's just a thriller, right? It's not to be taken too seriously, but of its type, if it's still on and you want an antidote to The Lion King, go see Crawl.
Cool. That's not what I was expecting to hear from you at all. I was ready for you just to tell me what a complete pile of poo it was.
Yeah, I think, as I say, as you said at the very beginning, I don't mind a decent thriller.
Right.
I'm quite happy to be, be on the edge of my seat, and I thought it did a decent job.
So, I mean, I know we're kind of being a bit hair-splitty here. Is it a thriller or is it a horror? Does it go for gore or suspense?
More suspense.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's some gore, but not huge amounts of gore.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah. So
you might have talked me into that, I think.
Yeah. Well, especially given your experience in Florida.
Oh, yes.
Mind you, can I just say the film was entirely made in Serbia.
Oh.
Why they had to go to Serbia to make a film set in Florida, I don't know. But anyway.
Well, I mean, that's more your territory than mine.
I know.
Is Serbia known for
I don't know. For they just, I don't, not that I'm aware of, no.
But that would explain... I mean, where are we looking here?
Yes,
I'm just looking at the cast list.
Yeah.
No, that's Blake Lively. I can't believe we forgot A Simple Favor. That's such a good film.
Yeah,
but it would explain
yes.
why you've got people like young Haley played by Tina Pribicevic.
Yeah, that would explain
and,
it.
And
yes.
Louis played by someone who's not got enough vowels in his name. Srna Vasilievic. So yeah, clearly
there you are. There's the proof.
That would explain.
Yes, it will.
But, yeah, I mean, seriously, SR, that guy needs at least one more vowel. At least one more. Anyway.
All right, so we should finish now with a film we've both seen.
Yes, and probably the high point of the week. He says provocatively.
Yeah. Well, this was a film. We didn't see eye to eye on this. I'm really looking forward to your... explanation, Steve. This is the film Yesterday.
Yes,
it's a romantic comedy.
Yes,
it's a story about the Beatles.
Yes,
and what made it sing for you? Excuse the pun.
Richard Curtis.
Okay,
I think it's as simple as that. So the obligatory plot synopsis with no spoilers involved because this is all in the trailer.
Yeah. Okay.
Is you've got this bizarre premise?
Yeah, right? Totally bizarre.
That. The world experiences a global power cut for 3 seconds, and Jack, played by Himesh Patel, gets knocked off his bike by a bus. When he comes round, the world is totally normal. Nothing has changed whatsoever. Everything is the same. Except when, because we forgot to mention Jack's an up-and-coming singer.
Yes.
He's sitting around with his mates. They've bought him a new guitar to replace one that got knocked off by the bus. They say, sing us a song. And he starts to sing Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And all his mates go, "Mate, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you write that?"
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that he's the only person in the world who has any knowledge, even Google has no knowledge, of the Beatles.
Yep.
And so he then starts writing Beatles songs. And there's wonderful scenes where he's frantically trying to remember as many Beatles songs as he can, and you're sitting there watching it going, "Oh yeah, don't forget when I'm 64, mate." And he's pulling out films that you've forgotten, and it's lovely. You've got Lily James as his isn't she girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
Ellie,
mm-hmm.
And playing exactly the kind of role that she needs to be playing. She's not Meryl Streep. This is the kind of role that she does really, really well. So you've got a fantastic pair of leads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got, I mean, oh, what's his name? Sanjeev Bhaskar and Meera Sayal as right. his parents,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
who keep interrupting him when he's when he's trying to demonstrate them for the first time ever a song that they want to call "Leave It Be."
That's right. And rather than "Hey Jude,"
yes,
it's "Hey Dude."
Yes, exactly. because you've got Ed Sheeran in it.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I mean, the setup is nonsense. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely absurd. But you don't care because it's so well done. Richard Curtis can do this stuff in his sleep. Danny Boyle directing it knows exactly how to make a film flow. You put the two of them together, you've got great acting talent. It was lovely. When I wasn't laughing, I was smiling or singing.
Okay, I'm being very patient.
Because I'm waiting for the moment when you say, and that's all we have time for tonight. Because you're going to tell me why you think I'm wrong, aren't you?
I mean, I think the performances were engaging. It's the Beatles music. The music is great. And I thought the sort of the modern reinterpretation of some of the songs was good.
Yeah.
And the Himesh Patel can sing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's got a good voice. But I come back to the point you made about the premise. And all these sorts of films, whatever they are, they rely on their success for you in the audience to not either to buy the huge leap of logic that you're invited to make and not care about it, because it doesn't matter, because you're enjoying the story so much, the fact that it's impossible, it doesn't matter. And so if it pulls that off, you have a wonderful time. If it doesn't pull it off, you don't have such a wonderful time.
Right. And I'm taking from what you're saying.
Well, yeah. And I'd, so
off
let me
was not pulled.
No, off was not pulled. Can we say that?
I just did.
So, and I, it sounds like I'm being cynical and jaded and a bit pedantic, and maybe I am, but I just didn't quite buy the idea of what was going on. And I partly, it was because when it first happened, I thought, and we started to see the story unfold about him discovering the Beatles, and all this fame and fortune that came his way, I thought, oh, this is one of those films where it's actually a dream or a nightmare. He's going to wake up.
Right,
I had that thought for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, no, that's not. It actually is. We are actually being asked to believe it has actually happened.
Yes.
And then it's just that I felt the lead character, Jack.
Yeah.
His character was put in the way the story was developed as a story about the Beatles, but also as a romantic comedy, in a very difficult position. Because this is my how I started to see it unfold for me. I thought, on the one hand, Jack is we have to say at the beginning, is presented as a genuine, hardworking, honest, decent bloke.
Oh yeah,
right.
Well, salt of the earth.
Salt of the earth.
Absolutely.
He, through this miracle, can plagiarize his way to fame and fortune, right? So he is presented with a certain moral dilemma there in the story. And you see him grapple with it a little bit.
Oh, very definitely, yes.
At the same time as he is starting to realize it, and as the film develops, that this friend that the character Ellie has been maybe could be more than that. And as the story develops, there's this sort of push and pull between, do I go with the Beatles fame or do I go with Ellie? Yeah. And I found that wasn't getting there.
Except, I mean, this is Richard Curtis. It's what he
does
best.
I know.
He can't help himself.
Yeah.
But he does it well.
I will. Can I just make a mention of one of the actors who I have, and I think you did too, panned in a previous performance.
Oh, yeah.
The American actress Kate McKinnon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who plays the manager.
Yeah, Deborah.
Deborah. I thought she was really good in this film.
Yeah, and I think she thought she was in a different film.
Maybe, but it just seemed to work for me because it...
She did, yeah. She just basically goes, right, that's it. This is the role I'm playing. I don't care what else is going on in the film. I'm doing this and I'm just going to make it work. I thought she was quite good, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, I think what happens is if you start to have that little nagging doubt in the back of your mind as a story like this unfolds, it just distracts you a little bit. And I just got distracted.
Yeah. And so you're totally okay with the idea of, say, I don't know, Chris Hemsworth as a Norse god. That doesn't bother you in the slightest.
It's a very subjective thing.
Clearly. See, and the thing is, one thing I thought that was actually quite clever is they set up the premise very explicitly in the trailers.
Okay.
So that before you go into the film, you kind of self-selected a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
So that someone like yourself, who's going to go, what a pile of bollocks, isn't going to waste his $15
on
a
enough.
Ticket.
Yeah.
Whereas someone like me goes, oh wow, that looks like really
fun. Yeah.
We'll go in knowing, you know, ready for it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be many people who go to this going, really?
I know what the thought I had was. It was like, if you're going to do a romantic comedy about a couple who are sort of really should be together, to come up with the idea of this story is such a it's such a huge leap in a story to come up with this idea to sell a romantic comedy. It's almost like that idea could be told in a totally different context.
Yeah,
in
again,
a way.
Again, Richard Curtis.
Yeah, I guess.
And he can't help himself. And he's tried to put a will they won't they couple together in so many different ways. He's not got much left to work with.
Okay, all right.
But what I will say, look, yes. I mean, the bottom line for me was that it worked, but it also worked because of the performances. Like I say, I think Himesh Patel's fantastic. I think even the incidentals, like, for example, Sanjeev Bhaskar, who in that one scene keeps interrupting his son when he's trying to premiere Let It Be, and his dad keeps interrupting. Mm-hmm. It's such beautifully observed scenes.
Yeah,
that was one.
Yeah, I agree.
There's another scene which obviously echoes the Beatles' last ever performance. Oh. It's the first time that he performs the Beatles songs on stage, and he's on the roof of the country, the beach pub in Lowestoft, and he plays Help. And you know, you forget sometimes, and one of the best times you ever see it is at the very end of, now which, what was the name of it, there's a film about the Beatles with Pete Best. And it's set, I can't remember, I should have looked this up, the name of the film.
Okay.
And it's set basically in the Cavern Club and then in Hamburg.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really early on. And at the end of it, you get this close-up of the actor playing John Lennon unleashing himself into Twist and Shout and screaming into the microphone. And you remember, that's who the Beatles really were, not just the long and winding road.
The
Beatles had a lot more venom and energy than we often remember.
Yeah.
And he channels that in that one scene at the end of it, when he's playing Help, not as a song, but as a literal cry.
Right. Yeah, he is.
And at the very end, when he screams into the microphone, "Won't someone please help me?" I'm thinking, my God, this is an amazing performance.
I agree with that. Up to that point, I wasn't buying the dilemma, once he realized he felt something for Ellie, how he could still put her to one side and carry on with his immoral plagiarizing of the Beatles. But I just wasn't buying that.
Yeah, because that's something I would like to actually seem to explore more, is given that he lives in a world where the Beatles had never really been a thing, ultimately they were a figment of his imagination. So was he really plagiarizing, or was he in
fact...
Yes,
he was. Because he
believed he was.
No, because...
Are you getting to spoiler territory here?
I'm just going to say,
I think I know where you're going with
this. Yeah, because let's just say there might be a reason why he can believe that... how do we say this without spoiling it? Oh, it's been out for a little while. Yeah. Sorry, I'm pausing because I don't want to give it away. But there is a part of the story which deals with how unique a position Jack might be as the only person to have remembered
the Beatles.
Anyway, look, I think that it is subjective. There's a lot of enjoyment and entertainment to be had in the film.
Yes.
If you buy the premise, you're going to have a great time.
Oh, most definitely.
If you don't, and I didn't...
I can see how that would...
It did distract me.
Yeah, that's...
Let's just put it like that.
Such a shame.
It is a shame, but never mind.
Never mind. I thought it was brilliant, and I'll probably go and see it again.
Oh, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good. Hey, so nice that we finished with a movie that deals with music legends.
Yes.
Because we can just move along to our announcements that you so diligently put on our website, cravepodcast.com. Steve, much that's coming up in the next little while?
There's a small number.
Yep.
Small number. A surprising little sprinkling.
surprising little sprinkling,
well,
okay.
I mean, we'll start off with some local music.
Yeah.
Sons of Zion.
Okay.
Kiwi band.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be up and down the country, New Plymouth, Christchurch, Tauranga, Auckland, Hamilton, Wellington, and Queenstown.
Right.
The only one that really matters, obviously, is Auckland. August the 10th is a Saturday at the Power Station, but the other dates are also at the website cravepodcast.com. Postmodern Jukebox, are you familiar?
Familiar with the name, not so familiar with the music. I'd be lying if I said I was. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
This is basically a bloke named Scott Bradley, who has, his shtick is he does kind of pastiches of recent songs, of recent hits. He does them in sort of like 1920s to 40s jazz arrangements.
Right.
And he's got a touring, sort of revolving touring band doing the rounds. And they love New Zealand.
As
you would.
Yeah.
So they're actually doing they're doing about one a year, extensive Anzac tour.
Okay.
So they're doing about a dozen dates over on the West Island. And then they're coming over here and they're doing this is an American band.
Yeah.
In Auckland, Hamilton, Napier, Palmerston North. I'll let that sink in for a second. Wellington, Christchurch, and Dunedin. That's not a bad go for an American.
That's
pretty good. And that's going to be, they're starting in Tauranga on Friday, the 11th of October. We've got Stan Walker.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, who gets around. We've got quite an extensive tour coming up there as well. So 9-day national tour.
Okay.
He's going to be hitting all the major New Zealand centres. Again, the dates are on the website, cravepodcast.com. The FOMO Festival. New one.
Yeah, I haven't heard of the FOMO Festival.
No, this is kind of a new one.
Yeah.
It's going to be Wednesday the 15th of January at the Trusts Arena in Auckland. Mellow Downs are the Kiwi representatives. The big name is the American singer Lizzo, who... fantastic soul singer from America.
Okay.
You've got Brockhampton from the US. You've got Kay Tranada from Canada. You've got Octavian from the US. That's going to be a fairly impressive lineup.
Okay.
But then the big one.
Right.
The big one. This is, you know, obviously because we know how big Crave is in Norway.
Goes without saying.
And now Norway's coming to New Zealand. Okay. You remember Aha, don't you?
Oh, I remember Aha. Well, I remember of them, yes.
Well,
yes.
You remember their one big hit, Take On Me.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Do you remember anything else about them?
Nope.
No, they didn't remember that. But they are coming for their first ever New Zealand tour.
Okay.
And they're bringing with them Rick Astley.
Get out. Really?
Yeah, he's never going to give you up.
No.
How
old would he be now, I wonder? In his 50s or 60s, he must be.
Absolutely.
At least. Anyway, okay, well, that's very good.
Yeah,
so people who are into their pop would be the ones who that's going to appeal to.
Yes, and also local bands to support the Beths.
The Beths.
The Beths.
That's a hard one to say.
It is indeed. But they're going to be supporting both Aha.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, we're getting straight into Alan Partridge. Are you familiar with Alan Partridge?
Yes, what was that famous song? The one, he said, one big hit. Well, I mean, probably lots of hits, but there was one particular song. I'm thinking of, he was the Alan Partridge is the sort of made-up journalist, isn't
yes,
he?
Steve,
someone else.
Who they did a show with him for a while called Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge.
Yes, right.
And at the start of every mock interview he does, knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, Simon Mercer.
Okay.
Aha. And unfortunately, as soon as I saw this announcement, that's it. Yeah. They need to be introduced by Alan Partridge. But anyway, so that's coming up very shortly as well. So yeah, there's some decent.
It's given that this is kind of the time of the year for us when it's a little slower often with live. But the big acts, you know, tend to come over our summer, obviously.
This is true. Well, that's what the FOMO Festival is obviously getting its announcement right about now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, okay, cool.
The film I'm really excited about is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is coming out very, very shortly.
Yeah, that'll be good.
We've also got Skyscraper Stan is going to be in town next week.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Snow Patrol.
Okay.
Irish band who have done some absolutely wonderful light. I mean, if I describe them as like light rock, it makes them sound a bit vague and vaguely insipid and wimpish. But they will be at the Altea Centre, ASB okay. Theatre, on the 8th of August, and I'm really looking forward to
okay,
that.
Okay, cool, good.
So, yeah, some good stuff.
Yeah, so it's all there on cravepodcast.com. So, we had a good yarn about some movies and some good interviews this week.
Absolutely.
Time for us to go. We'd like to hear from you. Please do get in touch. You can email us on podcast@cravepodcast.com.
That's the one.
It is.
We're on Facebook, obviously, because all the cool kids are. Also on Twitter, we're at Crave Podcast.
Right. So until next time, I'm Simon Mercier.
I'm Steve McCabe. And that is what... Oh, sorry, Dave. I wasn't expecting
it. I was going to throw it to him.
And that is what has been entertaining us
this week.
Amateurs.
That's fun.